enough, I think. So that's what we want, right? And also the skills will carry on. And of course, knowing that your voice is important, and the political education for all of us around criminalization and the violence of that in our communities, so we can fight that together. So how can people hear the podcasts?
They can go to kbu.fm. I think it's just kbu.fm /profile. Profiles is the name of the program that we're doing, the podcast that we're doing.
If they did a search for criminalization or Morpheus, that would probably work.
Or Profiles. Profiles is, it comes up. We've got two podcasts on there. I've been meaning to throw some extra, you know, extended interviews on there, which I'll get up there pretty soon. And we've been gathering, Delphine Crescenzo and I have been teaming up on it together, and we'll be collecting some more stuff to do kind of a part two of the East Portland program that we started, which was our second podcast. I think it came out really good, but we have a whole nother piece of that that we want to do.
I didn't even know she was doing that. She does so much. She's on our board, and she does our training.
She's one of my volunteers doing the radio stuff.
She's so much all over the community. Yeah. Such a committed person. Is there anything else you'd like people to know about?
I mean, we're just real busy. You know, we got a lot of stuff going on. If you're interested in supporting the type of stuff that we're doing, we've got a couple fundraisers that are coming up. Take a look at our website. We've always got stuff going on. I got a really cool one, a fundraiser coming up in November. That's a, it's going to be at, it's November 13th at the Lagunitas tap room. They have a tap room here in Portland now, and they're, it's only open so that nonprofits can come, throw events, and raise money. And it's just going to be a blast. We're going to have DJ Weather out there. My friend Dusty Fox is going to perform that night, and we're going to have, we're going to be inviting the B-boy scene out, the breakdance community, and you know, we're going to be, you know, mixing up breaks and stuff like that and getting down. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Will you bring some flyers in so folks can, you can call the radio station if you're not online, or come down and get a flyer for more information always. If you don't have a computer or access to Wi-Fi, you can call the front desk and ask about any of the events that you hear on the air for. What's your website for folks?
Well, that's what I was going to get to next. It's morpheusyouth.org. So morpheusyouth.org. Yes, Morpheus, like Matrix Morpheus.
Yeah.
That wasn't the intention, but yeah, that's the Morpheus. Hopefully, you know, sometime down the line, Larry Fishburne will give us an endorsement
that
or
would
something.
Be
we'll get him on the front of the
website. I would not be surprised.
But yeah, that's the website. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. Check us out. There's lots of stuff that we're doing.
Thank you for everything that you're doing for our community and for being here today and for our great partnerships that enrich all of us.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mark. I appreciate you inviting me.
It is 6:03. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next in just a moment, we have a special live edition of Right to Survive Radio.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, Sex and Broadcasting, will play Thursday, October 13th at 7 p.m. Sex and Broadcasting is a documentary about the revolutionary independent radio station WFMU and its station manager, Ken Friedman. The film explores the question of how to do interesting, cool, culturally significant radio and internet broadcasting while being a sustainable institution.
I just want there to be a WFMU. I want WFMU to exist as a place where people can go who don't fit in, where people can go to find things that have been hidden.
Again, that's Sex and Broadcasting, Thursday, October 13th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage.
Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio, and
I'm Lisa Faye.
And today we come to you with a very news flash show. We want to utilize this show to inform everyone about the Homeless Bill of Rights, Right to Rest Act bill. But today we was involved in something very drastic, and we want to talk to you about what happened at City Hall today.
We have some people that were victims of police brutality today here. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Ibrahim Mubarak, Right to Survive, Right to Dream, and Rap, and Job with Justice, Executive Board.
I'm Ron Corey with Right to Survive and Right to Dream.
I'm Linda Sin, a community member with Sisters of the Road and Right to Survive and Right to Dream.
And I'm Shannon Cogan. I'm with Sisters of the Road, and I was not actually a victim of police brutality today. The other folks in the room here were.
Thank you. Thank you all. Originally, we were going to talk about the Right to Rest Bill and the Houseless Bill of Rights campaign, but I think that we need to have a little conversation about what took place today at City Hall. Would anyone like to start us off? Ibrahim, tell us what happened.
Well, the day started off with Black Lives Matter, Don't Shoot Portland, spending the night in front of City Hall, where they was waiting for the outcome of the decision the City Council in Portland, Oregon, was going to make to give the police a raise and a 48-hour gap in accountability so they can, edit the tape, or if they shoot someone, to debrief them so they can calm down instead of getting them at that point where they don't have a chance to think, to make up a lie or concoct a story. So in lieu of that, right after the decision was made to give the police a raise and no accountability, the police was there and they start pushing people out. They start spraying people, kicking people, trampling over women with their children and stuff. So I'll let Linda continue from there because she was there. However, if you want to call in and ask us questions, please do. I can't remember the
number. And we'll get you a phone number, a call here in a minute. Linda, what was your account of what happened inside City Hall?
I had stepped outside of City Hall for a moment to talk to a friend. Before I left out the door, I asked, because I had signed up earlier to testify in regards to the houseless crisis that's happening right now in Portland. And I was on my way back in to see if I was on the list, where I was on the list to testify, and noticed all the officers that were on the inside doing a very fast-moving, aggressive, forward-pushing people out the, I think they're the back doors to City Hall. And I noticed through all that a lot of things, but primarily I was noticed that there was a man on the ground that seemed to be knocked out, and he was being trampled on, so I was trying to hold the door open to try to get help to him, to support him, or just bring awareness to the officers around that he was on the ground. There were other people on the ground laying there and being kicked and trampled on and thrown down the back stairs of City Hall. It was pretty intense. Then the SWAT team came around the backside and started shoving people down off of the stairs that were just trying to get their footing straight. And next thing you know, I was maced, or pepper sprayed is what it was, pepper sprayed directly in my right eye. After that, everything's kind of a blur for me.
And what initiated this confrontation between the protesters and the police?
they had asked for us to, they had asked for the tents to be picked up and to be removed from the building. I wasn't there right when the incident happened from the inside because I had stepped outside. So I don't know if they were just like all of a sudden, I seen officers getting gloves on their hands. They started like adding a few more officers and they asked for the room to be cleared. I believe at one point they did.
So did any...
People were leaving.
Yeah, so the protesters was in compliance.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
They were leaving out the door and they were just... were pushing them from behind. Just they people weren't moving fast enough, I guess.
And so this is the way Portland police celebrate getting a raise.
Ron, did you want to add anything? I understand you were there at that point
yeah.
as well.
I was up, I think, standing next to you at one point. We were right there, and we were videoing them because they were videoing us, and they were starting to put gloves on, and more kept stacking up on the stairs. And it turned out that, you know, I had walked out about 5 minutes before they started throwing people out. And then at that point, just everything fell to pieces. I mean, they were just, like, coming after us. I mean, we couldn't go fast enough to get away from them. And, yeah.
And you said you were not involved in the violence, but were you there and seeing what happened?
So sisters had spoken and written in previously to city council about the contract and how we supported slowing down the process and including community voices in the contract negotiations. And so this morning we brought coffee up to the protesters because we're quite good at making coffee. And we were not there, or I was not there when all hell broke loose, it seems. But I think it's really important to note that this happened when the public was asking for something of their public servants. And if these people are our public servants and are being shut out of the very place that is supposed to serve them, that's not right. And the way that they went about it is absolutely not right.
Now, Ron, you had two incidents today.
Right.
What happened the first time?
The first time we had, after all that had, you know, happened inside and things had kind of spilled over to the outside and it had calmed down for a while. I'd headed back to the rest area and he would come back down and said, we all need to get back there. You know, things are really getting bad. So I ran from where I was to up there. And, I think Ebe somehow got there before me, but, he beat me. And, we stayed up there for a while, and everything was pretty quiet. We were in the street, but we weren't causing a problem or anything. And then we got rumor was going around that they were bringing up, you know, SWAT. So we, at that point, just lined up and kind of built a barricade in the middle of the street. And at one point, we did go to, what was it, the left sidewalk? Or I believe the left sidewalk. We were kind of confused on what sidewalk to go to. We didn't want to go to the wrong one. So we got over to the other sidewalk, and that's where we're supposed to be. Eve said, you know, here, you need to kind of hold on to me. And I didn't listen. So I ended up getting, it was probably, the guy was about 6'3". I mean, he was huge. And he was an African-American officer, and he wouldn't talk or anything. I mean, he just it was like stone cold. I mean, it was crazy. And he started pushing us back, and he kept hitting me in the chest and my arm with his baton. And then at one point, I'd fell down and ended up getting kicked like 3 times by him. And then, you know, just stomped on by 2 or 3 more of them trying to get over. And then I got up, and I was, you know, I realized my arm was in really bad shape, and so were my ribs. But I ended up staying against better judgment. Yeah, but so I stayed, and we formed another line, and the police lined up on the other side and all their SWAT gear, and then just started coming right at us. We backed up on the sidewalk like we were supposed to do, and then they started telling us 3 feet. Go back 3 feet, and they'd push us, and, you know, and we'd push back. And then they'd say, we want another 3 feet. And it was like, we couldn't figure out what we're supposed to do and not to do. And then it seemed like just to instigate us, they wanted 3 more feet. And that's when Eve stood and said, no, you know, this is a public sidewalk. So we pushed against them. We weren't going to go any further. We hit our 6 feet, and we stayed there, and that was where we were. And then all of a sudden, out of my right side, after they pushed us some more, just got full face of mace and or tear gas or whatever it is. Eve got some. A guy behind me got it, too. It was huge. I mean, the thing was about as big as half the size of a fire extinguisher. It was huge. And so, yeah, it was pretty bad. I ended up going to the hospital for it, and a lot of people were laying down and really, really hurt. I mean, it was like a disaster zone there for, you know, a while.
Let's give the call-in number if there's listeners out there that would like to call in to the show. The number is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. I understand that during the protest, there was women with children, some infants, and were the police making any effort whatsoever to not get the women or children, or the women with children, or were they just totally non-discriminatory in who they were going to spray?
Well, when after we had left City Hall, and then I saw a live stream, and it looked like a battlefield of all the protesters laying on the ground in the middle of the street where the police had knocked people down, pepper sprayed them, pushed them around, and grabbing people who they had targeted, per se, the leaders or the people who organized the action. And when I got back, this lady was, you know, chasing after her son or walking with her son. I can't quite remember. She was dragging him. She had his sweater, and he was running. And I guess the mist of it had got in his eyes something. And then another lady, young lady that I know, I don't know if I could mention her name or her son's name, she had went and washed her son's face off. And, you know, as I walk around there, a lot of women was pepper sprayed and crying and laying in the streets while people was rushing to patronize, you know, 7-Eleven and to get milk and pulling people's eyes and stuff. I don't think this was expected, but with the Portland police, you should always expect this type of behavior from them. And again, after the incident that Ron and I had got pepper sprayed and Ron got beat and kicked, this older lady, I think she was about 80 years old. I have pictures of it. And look at my Facebook if you want to see everything that I saw. Showed us and was talking to the news people. And they didn't want to talk to her. And she said, but look, they beat me in my arm. Here go the bruise. And her arm is all bruised. You can see it was continuing to swell. So anybody that didn't have on the stormtrooper gear, they was after, whether they're innocent bystander, a youth looking at in shock on how the public servant treat the public, or people that was protesting. They just did what they wanted to without any. They wasn't under control or nothing. The only thing that was orderly was they knew how to take 2 steps, 3 steps.
Did you want to add anything?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to say that, you know, the purpose of going to City Hall today was to speak about the crisis of houselessness and continue to bring awareness to the commissioner and the mayor and all those that are involved. You know, it wasn't, I didn't come with my mace. I didn't come with my billy club. I didn't show up to antagonize officers. I showed up to speak about a real crisis that's really happening across our nation. That's why we showed up, not to be victims or brutalized or play games with these officers. We're looking for equality and fairness, and this is what they give us. You know, there was actually the statement made by one of the commissioners that we're buying the 48-hour law rule. We're buying truth. If you use force, tell us why. Explain yourself. What's wrong with that? And why can't you do it right when it happens? We're expected to tell you all the information when an officer comes up on the scene. What do you know? How do you know it? What's your name? And we're supposed to hand that information over quickly. Why aren't they doing the same thing? But we have to purchase that out of their bargaining. It's ridiculous. There's a lot of things that it's not, but what it's not is not right.
And Ron, after when we took you to the ambulance or whatever they call it here in Portland, to hospital truck, maybe, I don't know, they didn't want nobody to go with you. And it was a big argument. And I said, you arguing with us about his daughter going with him, and he's in there hurting. You said, you don't care. So they did take you to the hospital. Can you tell us about the treatment that you got while there?
Yeah, when we got to the hospital, the medics were fairly cordial on the way. But once we got there, the nurses were like, oh, what's this about? You know, I mean, they were asking, and the medic said he came from the protest. Everyone changed that. I mean, they weren't nice. They stuck me in a room. And I saw security, I don't know if he was posted there or told to be right around there, because we were watching the protest on TV there. And we noticed a security guy outside my door. And I was like, what's going on, you know? And they wouldn't do anything for me. They didn't help wash the rest of the pepper spray out. They just left me in a room, didn't do anything for any kind of pain that I had. They didn't care. We just laid there, and then they took me to x-ray, and once we came back, the treatment still continued, so I left. I said, I'm not staying around here no more. I mean, enough mistreatment for one day.
So you don't know if your arm is broke or you got cracked ribs or not?
Not yet. I mean.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. You got questions, you want to make a comment, or answer anything, sing, dance, give us a call. Right to Survive Radio, 503-231-8187.
You know, last I checked, we had a constitutional right to be able to peacefully protest. It seems like there was a gross violation of human rights today. Part of that gross violation included police brutality at a simple, peaceful protest. And that's very disturbing right after we got done hearing that the council and the mayor had agreed to the bargaining terms, that they were getting their contract that they wanted. They were getting to keep their 48-hour role where they don't have, after a violent crime has taken place and the police or the perpetrators don't have to say anything or give testimony or make any type of formal statement for 48 hours. That gives them enough time to seek counsel. It gives them enough time to change their story. It gives them enough time to cover up their story. So with these acts of perpetrated violence by the police, does anyone here see any change that's going to come, or any way that we could, as a community, change what's going on, view things differently, hold the police accountable for their actions?
I honestly, I don't know that there's anything in place to hold the police accountable for their actions. I don't know what we could do. I do know that there's ways that we can lobby to have laws changed, so that the police are not enforcing certain laws. They're not harassing people who are living outside. That's what the Right to Rest Act is all about. I think that we can call our legislators, we can endorse the Right to Rest Act and say, hey, if you are living outside and you need to sleep, then we are not going to have people waking you up in the middle of the night, forcing you to move. We're not going to have people acting like bullies who are state public servants. I think that that is absolutely something that can be done. On a Portland level, after today, if there are continued protests and other ways that you want to call for police accountability, you can get involved with the IPR stuff that Linda knows a lot about and can talk about, as well as simply emailing your council people and letting them know where you stand on this, because they are supposed to represent the people that live here and not other interests.
And why you brought that up about the Right to Rest Act, can we discuss more about that? Because this is what the houseless community been crying out on, how they've been treated by the police. And now it's spilling over into the public. And they train on people with no voices and people not listening to them, but now you see how they act after they trained on the house community to the public. So this intersectionality thing that we need to keep together, and the housed and the public need to help the unhoused as well as the unhoused helping them. So we are having a campaign with the Homeless Bill of Rights, and I'm sure you will hear more about that. If you don't know, call in at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187.
And with the Houseless Bill of Rights, why is it important to hold the police accountable?
From what I saw today, it just, yeah. There was no accountability there. I mean, they were just doing whatever they wanted to do. And for me, that was really tough to see because, I mean, they were, you know, like the sergeant was behind them whispering in their ear, you know, and then it just seemed like they were, it was almost fun to them, you know. So, no.
So these are the things they do to the houseless people in the dark and behind people's back. And that's why, and people say that, why you want a different Bill of Rights? Why you calling a houseless Bill of Rights? We don't want a different Bill of Rights. We want the same rights, but we just emphasizing on how the police harass us, dictate to us, use prisoner tactics, war prison tactics on us by not letting us get enough sleep and being sleep deprived, where we can't act according on how to get productive. And this is a time, an opportunity where the house community can cry out for themselves and say, hey, y'all keep harassing me. Hey, we need to have a safe place to sleep. It's not criminal to sleep.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. Who do we have? Hello?
Yeah, hey, this is Paul Bowden from the Western Regional Advocacy Project.
Hi, hello, Paul.
Hey, you guys.
Hi, Paul.
How's it going?
Well, the cops aren't kicking our butt today down here. I guess it was your turn.
Yes, we got roughed up pretty bad here today. So what did you want to talk about with us?
I thought we were going to sort of transition over to how this connects to the Homeless Bill of Rights campaign and the social justice movement that we're launching in our states. I mean, you know, when you look at what Prineville just did up in wherever the heck Prineville is in Oregon, with their exclusion ordinance that they just passed, where now they're saying if we don't like the way you're behaving or the way you look, we can kick you out of our public spaces. And you look at how the cops are shooting people, just like they've been shooting mentally ill people and people of color. They're doing it with rampant. I mean, I don't see how anyone could think that passing the vote to give them the money they wanted, and everybody knows the cops have the strongest unions in the country. Unions are desperate and are losing power in every other sector of this country except in the police and maybe the sheriff's department, except in law enforcement. You know, these are powerful, powerful entities. And as soon as they got what they wanted, they cut loose and started beating the crap out of people. That's the cop mindset. We'll be nice to you so long as we're waiting to get what we want. Now we got what we want, you get the hell out of our town. And homeless people ain't the first victims of this stuff, and we ain't going to be the last victims. And unfortunately, we clearly ain't the only victims right now, but we got to all band together. Whether we're talking LGBT, whether we're talking day laborers, whether we're talking public housing, whether we're talking poor people being gentrified out by business improvement districts, the cops are the mass, are the army of oppressing and beating down and trying to keep down poor people and people of color.
You're very correct on that point.
It's all of us.
Very correct. And since you're very familiar with the Houseless Bill of Rights, can you tell us how the Houseless Bill of Rights ties into what we're talking about today?
Yeah, because the Houseless Bill of Rights defends our right, all of us. It doesn't just protect homeless people. It says nobody can ever be criminalized by local governments for standing still, for sitting down, for sleeping, for eating. It says people have a right to be in public space. And every time when you look historically at ugly laws, Jim Crow laws, anti-Okie laws, you know, Japanese American Exclusion Act, Bossarero treaties, when you look at how these laws have been implemented historically and today, it's to target certain people. And that's the irony of Brineville in Oregon. They say excluding certain people from public spaces. They don't hide this crap. They know what they're doing. And every once in a while it leaks out in what they write. But excluding certain people from public spaces is a tried and true method of local governments. We don't want you here. We want you to get the hell out. So we're going to pass a law that we're only going to enforce against you. Everybody knows we all stand still at some point during the day. Only some of us are going to get beaten up, harassed, or killed by the cops for doing it. The cops are enforcers of racist and classist laws, and if we can get those laws off the books, it just gives them one less reason to attack us for being human beings and being in public space.
Absolutely, Paul. Do you think you could explain to people what is going on in Prineville, which is in Central Oregon? I don't think probably a lot of people have heard about what's going on out there.
Just, on the 27th of September, they passed an ordinance that they wrote up that says any city employee, but the cops will be the enforcers of it, they always are, but any city employee can kick you out of public space for not following their rules. Of course they add for breaking laws. Well, you know what? They can hassle us for breaking laws. They've been hassling us for breaking their quote-unquote laws for a long time. But they added a section that says, or rules, meaning rules they created. And they cited spitting. They cited having a bicycle. There was even a line about being in a public space with no legitimate reason. Since when do people need a reason to be in public space? But they created a list of categories where they can, in their words, exclude people from public space because they don't want to see them, because they don't want them to be there. And it passed.
Mm-hmm. It passed unanimously, I believe.
It's like the original Constitution for the state of Oregon and how racist that was, or probably still is. But it's blatantly, when the ordinance is titled excluding certain people, mm-hmm. you know the rest of it is not going to be healthy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, that's not a civil rights document. You know that for sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're hearing more and more at RAP, you know, because we're in several different states, Colorado, Oregon, and California, but we work with groups in other states, vigilante groups and vigilante groups going after homeless people is severely on the rise. I'm going to Eureka in California, Stanislaus, California. I know you guys have had it up at Springwater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that, you know, vigilante groups have started going on the attack because the level of hatred, and just even in the Bay Area, which everyone thinks is so liberal down here, a man was attacked at a red light for having a turban on his head. Was attacked by three guys in a pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the level of hatred and visceral and racism, you know, and Trump is a nationally recognized figure of it, but it's certainly not just him.
Yes, it's happening in communities as small as Prineville, which has maybe 2,000 or 3,000 people and is quite rural and isolated in Oregon.
And, you know, it's just so all over the place that, you know, we have to connect all of our issues and have a social justice movement that speaks and defends and fights around all of our issues, because we're going down a road that is neoliberalism at the max. If people look at neoliberalism historically, you know, the South American and Central American banana republics, as they called it, because of the United Fruit Company's dominance down there.
Paul, can you say neoliberalism in layman's terms? That is a big word.
Yeah, it's in layman's terms, it's government works for corporate. And what's good for corporate is what government is concerned with, and it's government's only concern. And the needs and the wants and the desires and the health care of human beings that are being governed is of no consequence. If it isn't private industry benefiting and running the show, there is no legitimate reason for government to get involved. We called it Reaganomics. If you think about Reaganomics and trickle-down
Paul, let me put you on hold just for a minute. We have another caller that would like to have a say today.
503-231-8187. Call in and ask us a question or voice your opinion on what happened today. And if you want to know more about the Homeless Bill of Rights, Right to Rest Act, do call in. We just got a note in. It said the TV coverage kept saying the police reacted to someone throwing a water bottle at them, and they want us to address that. Anyone want to address it?
I can address that. From the position I was at, nothing had been thrown at the police. Police were forcibly pushing people out the back stairs. People's cell phones were going flying. People's purses were going flying. But this was after officers were in the process, and after they were already being pushed down the stairs. So that was no consequences of to, or it wasn't any relation to starting it, I guess, is what they're saying, is that protesters threw a water bottle and that's what started this. Yeah. Not at all.
We have another caller.
If a water bottle makes you want to beat people and kick people and break their arms and spray them with mace and knock over women with children and a lady with no legs push her over, then I think they need to go to anger management. They need to take their raise and pay us to know how to with the de-escalation skills. Sit on the sister of the road somewhere, you know.
We have another caller on the line. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hey, Ibrahim, what's up? It's Chris.
Hey, Chris.
I just wanted to, there is video. You can see in one of the videos a water bottle being thrown. But I think, like Eve just said, and the other person whose name I didn't catch, sorry, it happens after the police have pushed everyone down the stairs and are being pretty rough, and it's pretty clear what's going on. I wanted to talk about one thing that I saw, which I've been to a lot of protests. I've seen police do this kind of stuff a lot over the years, but I saw something today that I haven't seen a whole lot, which was, and this was later when people were in the street on Fifth Avenue. The riot cops came out and they cleared the street. I thought it was interesting that they said get out of the street and go up on the sidewalk, and then they pepper sprayed people on the sidewalk. That was interesting. But so after they cleared the sidewalk, then they just totally left the scene, which of course protesters were then able to go back in the street and like block the buses and traffic once again. The cops, after 20 minutes or something, came back. They came rushing in, did their whole thing, you know, roughed people up, did more pepper spray, arrested one or two people, I think, and then took off again, totally left, and left again. It's just obvious what's going to happen. People move right back into the street. And they did this two or three times. And it just seemed, you know, I'm just wondering what that particular tactic was all about. Did they want to, they weren't really trying to keep people out of the street and keep the street clear for traffic and the max, which they say on their loudspeaker is the point of the whole thing. They clearly weren't really trying to do that. They seemed to be, I mean, they were like letting people do that and then wanting to come back in, you know, club swinging kind of thing. It was interesting to me that this particular tactic of coming in, clearing the street, and then totally abandoning, I mean, not leaving any cops there to kind of hold their line.
Well, what I look at it as, it's a training day, you know,
yeah,
and they
totally.
Probably was angry
yeah.
that they had to be at work when they got a raise. They wanted to go out to happy hour or something, but they had to be watching over City Hall instead of a protest. And what they did come out and do that, and they said, and they went back to debrief and say what works. And they said, well, it works better when you use more pepper spray. They get out your way fast, you know, or kick them or something, you
yeah.
know. And so that routine is a routine that they use on the houseless community. When they come to sweep the houseless people, they line up and march in and start tearing people's tents up, cutting their tents up, moving them, checking people, trying to grab their ID to see if they have warrants, or looking their tent to see what they're doing, anything. These are tactics that they use on poor people. These are tactics they're starting to do better in to use on people that's going against the regime. And so, to me, they gearing up for making this a common, not a common, a martial law state.
Yeah, that's a good point. The other thing I suspect that they're so yeah, that makes sense to me. It's training. They go back and review. I think another thing they did when they retreated, they went back and reviewed their videotapes and found who they could then nab.
Yes.
Yes, so, I believe there was targeting going on.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think that one, the person who got targeted in the second time, I bet they found something on tape that they could stick that person with.
Yes, I was watching a little bit of the news feed on Channel 12 right before coming to the station, and I noticed that they targeted and arrested all the, let's say,
Cop watch.
Yes, the Kiff and Mike Bluehair and Bob.
Keith Davis.
And it was like it was a systematic, intentional thing. They went and sought them out of the crowds and then arrested them.
Interesting. All right, well, thanks for all your work, everyone. Let's keep an eye on these cops.
Thank you, Chris. You have a good night.
You too.
Okay, let's give. We have about 15 minutes left, and I would like to give the number one more time. And we just lost a call.
Hello?
Oh, I hear someone. Hello? Hello?
Oh, the producer is grabbing his head. He just hung up on someone.
The number is 503-231-8187. Hopefully the lovely lady's voice will call back and we can get her back on the line.
And Shannon, you have anything to add?
I mean, I just, one of Sister's founding philosophies is nonviolence, and the protests today started with disruption, but no violence was used. People were disrupting the business as usual in the council chambers, and to bring police violence into the mix there, that it's just not the right reaction to have. That's not the kind of city that we want to have here.
We have our caller back. Could we have your name and what is your question tonight?
Angela, I don't have a question. So I was downtown around 1, between 1 and 3. But anyway, in the Oregonian, they show, they have a pretty good video. They show, the police pushing the crowd out of City Hall, out of the front doors, the back doors of City Hall. And, you see this one police. Oh, God.
Yes?
Angela?
Angela?
You lost her again.
Uh-oh.
Do we still have Paul on hold? No, Paul hung up.
So in the video, I know what she's talking about in the video, that as they was pushing people back, it seemed like this one police just dove in and jumped on everybody, mm-hmm. and this little kid got... where a little child got caught under the mix, and they kept pushing him. He kept saying, "You're on my leg, you're on my leg." I didn't hear him, but that was the expression, saying, "You're on my leg," or something like that. And they kept pushing him in his head and stuff. You can see that.
When I was at the hospital, the x-ray tech had told me that there was another patient beside me, and it was a little boy.
Please hang up now.
And I think he was at Dornbecker. I mm-hmm. believe was where he was taken.
Right.
So he was there about the same time or before, but he was
from the protest.
Yeah.
Huh.
So.
We have a caller. Caller.
Hello.
Hello. How are you? What's your name and what's your question?
Good evening. I'm calling. My name is Deborah, and I'm calling from California, and I'm. Would just like to say that I apologize that y'all are going through that there. And that is something that we go through every day here in California. I think we need to remember the history of the police and militarization of the police and what's going on, and how they are just setting out every day to make a new ordinance or make a new law against those that don't have shelter in our community. And I think one of the things that they start out with is stealing common ground, is they take all the common area and they fence it up, do whatever they have to do with it so that we can't be on it. And that's the way that they start. And then with the laws of moving us out and just moving us, trying to make us go. But what I really want to say is there's nowhere to go. And we so need this Houseless Bill of Rights in every state. We have to have the right to rest, the right to pause, the right to sleep, the right to do life-sustaining acts. So I just want you to know that California stands in solidarity with you through this horrible time.
Yes, I agree. And that is one reason why Right to Survive is working so hard on the campaign here in Oregon, along with Sisters and Street Roots in Portland and our friends from CALC down in Eugene, and taking it across the state to try and make sure that the legislatures know that we have this bill coming and that they're prepared for us when we go back into session.
We need to stand in solidarity with each other. This is not just in Oregon or in California or in Washington or in little isolated areas. This is all over the nation this is happening, and we have to stand up. We, the people, need to stand up and say no more. We can't take any more, and we're not taking any more, and we need this legislation to protect us and to back us. And so I think that that's powerful, and I appreciate what you all are doing. But and I want you to know that we're standing in solidarity from the streets, because this issue is really big, and people are dying every day because of it. There's a lack of not addressing people, and that has to stop. If the police don't kill them, we'll have vigilante groups kill them, or we'll freeze them to death without shelter. One way or another, they're out to kill them and get rid of them, move them away, and keep them going, and get out of whatever town they're in.
We agree with you, Deborah. We do agree with you, and that's why we would like to just continue to move in solidarity with the Houseless Bill of Rights Act, you know, and keep going to our legislation and keep the face on.
Yes.
And also, Deborah, we are in a tripod state with California, Colorado, and Oregon fighting for the same rights. And you can, if you're in California, you can look up Western Regency Advocacy Project in San Francisco, spearheaded by Paul Bolden.
And also
these bills been passed in Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Illinois, but theirs was kind of watered down, and we want to put in, to leave in harassment. That's the biggest part for this bill, people being harassed. And again, you see, if you watch the news today, you didn't see them doing it to the houseless community. You saw them doing it to people that live inside. And if they can do that to us, they're going to do that to you. Martial law is coming to a neighborhood near you.
Yeah, and the war tactics that they use on the poor is, you know, just repeated, you know, no sleep, moving them around. It's cruel and unusual punishment.
Absolutely. I think you're right. It's cruel.
The people are the power.
It is. Yes, the people are the power, and that's where the Right to Rest Act comes from, actually. It comes from asking people who are sleeping outside, who are housing insecure, who are whatever you want to say, what's really impacting you every single day, and how can we do something about it? And people over and over and over and over again are saying that they are being impacted by police harassment for simply existing outside, for needing to sleep outside in a park or in a public place. People are asked to move. And when people are asked to move, they are then forced to move, and they lose vital medications, vital identification, all of these things. And so what we have done as Street Roots, as Sisters of the Road, as Right to Survive, is get together with other organizations and say, hey, we need to pass legislation to stop this, to make sure that these laws don't continue, and people have the right to exist outside while there isn't enough housing for people, while there aren't options. People shouldn't be criminalized for simply being.
Where I live, I have a friend that did 120 days in Eureka, California. It's illegal to be poor and not have a home. Literally illegal. You can't sit. You can't anything. You can't do anything in that town if you're poor. But leave. But my friend did 120 days for getting caught doing a life-sustaining act maybe nine times.
Thank you.
But 120 days. So, you know, we can't allow those type of ordinances and laws.
No, we can't. And thank you, Deborah. We're going to go to our next caller.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you. Caller, are you there?
Hello?
Hello, yes. We have a dial tone as well. Yes, caller, are you there?
Yeah, hey, it was just Paul.
Oh, hey, Paul.
Oh, I heard Deborah call in. I said, oh, damn, I should probably call back.
So
that's the group I'm going to hang out with next week, or in 2 weeks.
So, oh, cool. Is there anything you want to add to the Houseless Bill of Rights? Like, why is it so vital, and why is the need greater now than it was, say, 10 years ago or 20 years ago when the housing started to decline?
Well, I mean, just real quick, I want to add one piece to it. I mean, I think, you know, the Houseless Bill of Rights it's for the housed and the unhoused, and it's all of our Bill of Rights, and it'll defend all of our rights to be in public spaces, and so that doesn't necessarily prevent, it clearly doesn't prevent what the cops did today, because they can beat us up whether we're housed or unhoused as far as they're freaking concerned, but it gives us another step in the process of demanding our rights, and it shouldn't be as difficult as it's been for us to get these bills passed, but as the campaign itself is what's so important to it. And there's also a campaign that has been initiated out of the Caro Center in New York. It's the Poor People's Campaign. It's a revitalization of the Poor People's Campaign to celebrate the 50 years of the Martin Luther King and the village that they set up in Washington, D.C. And we had an awesome 3 days in Baltimore with groups that are primarily focused on all these different issues, from the National Welfare Rights Union and a bunch of other really kick-butt organizing groups, that none of us sat up there talking about our campaign is the most important. We spent 3 days talking about how we connect all of these campaigns to each other. And that, to me, is the core of addressing police brutality, of addressing income inequality, of addressing the racism and the classism that is clearly behind, and the neoliberal economics that are clearly behind all of these issues that we find ourselves grappling with, from education to immigration. And you know, there is the beginnings of bringing that together. And that's something that I think we can focus on, because that's sure as hell the only way we're going to win.
I agree with you, and I think that is definitely the right direction this nation needs to go. We need to unify our groups and get on the same page and understand that even though our issues may be different, there's common links and there's intersectionality between all of them. I would like Eve to finish up the show. We've got 2 minutes left, and I think there's something he's been trying to get out. Ibrahim?
I've been come down to our meetings at Right to Survive at Sister of the Rose this Thursday from 5 to 7 and learn how to know more about the Houseless Bill of Rights, and come and endorse us, because pretty soon, if you don't help us fight for our rights now, you may be needing our help to fight for your rights later. And we want to end this show with Christian Scott, and his title of his song is Ku Klux Police Department. Thank you all for listening.